That was Ivan Dobsky there with The Antique from their self-titled EP from 2009, and we're delighted to be joined in the studio now by Eric Knowles. Good afternoon to you.
That's an appropriate sort of intro. It's called Antique. Is that the title of that?
That is the title of that track by Ivan Dobsky.
I've got eclectic taste in music, but modern jazz, when there's a harmony, is okay by me.
Yeah, I mean, that's more sort of the indie version of jazz. But yeah, we shouldn't be talking about music because we've got you here for a limited amount of time. Eric Knowles is here from the Antiques Roadshow to talk about his one-man show, Antique Antics, which is going on at the Antic Playhouse this evening. And we'll be talking about that a little bit later on. But I suppose I should start by saying you've been involved with the Antiques Roadshow for about 20 years.
Well, actually, believe it or not, I know this is going to come as a shock to you, Daniel, but 30 years this year. Yeah. Isn't that scary? I know why you said 20, because I look so much younger.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Let's start as we mean to go on.
Yes, exactly. So I suppose, having been involved for 30 years, what was it that got you into antiques in the first place?
History. I've always been a history freak ever since I was a small boy. Back in the days of real money, if I got half a crown for my birthday, I would spend it on a Ladybird book. It may have been on Admiral Nelson, or if I got another half crown, it would probably have been on Julius Caesar and Roman Britain. So it was always history. Growing up in my part of northeast Lancashire, mm-hmm. We were surrounded by history. We lived in the shadow of Pendle Hill, which is not quite 2,000 feet high, but it's big. Yes. And in 1612, that part of the world was the talk of the nation, because 19 of the locals were rounded up on a charge of witchcraft. Mm-hmm. So Pendle Hill is now synonymous with the Pendle witches. On top of that, you know, over the hill you've got a castle in Clitheroe. Further around the corner into darkest Yorkshire, you've got Skipton Castle, and then you've got two abbeys. You've got Sawley Abbey, you've got Worley Abbey, and then you've got great museums, great civic museums.
Yeah.
One of which is Townley Hall, which is where I was taken when I was a small boy, and probably something we might talk about later, because that's where we actually film the Antique Master series.
Fantastic. You're a specialist in ceramics. I'm wondering how you came to be interested in that particularly. I mean, when we were queuing the mics up, you said you have to have a certain amount of general knowledge. But
yeah.
What is it about sort of pottery and crockery that interests you?
Because where I live, that's all people had. Without getting the violin, I grew up in a very straightforward working class environment. People didn't have silver on the table. They didn't have oil paintings on the walls. And they didn't have bronzes, you know, for that month, you know, but they did have pots. Mm-hmm. And I used to start going into sort of secondhand shops and junk shops and all that sort of thing. And that is what was there. And, you know, as soon as I learned, excuse me, but I've got a ticklish throat. Excuse me, you're getting this live, folks, but it's not contagious.
Your coffee's on the way.
Good lad. And I should point out that, you know, the pots were plentiful. And there was plenty to learn about them. I mean, what makes an old pot? I mean, when I do my theatre show tonight, I'm going to show you one that I bought for about, I don't know, five bob. Sorry, I'm back in old money. 25p for you modern folk. And that plate turned out to have come from the little dairy at Versailles.
Wow.
It was actually made at Marie Antoinette's own porcelain works in Paris.
Fantastic.
And, you know, I mean, I am, you know, a romantic. It's the romance of history. I mean, when you look back, you know, maybe it's a slightly sort of coloured vision, because there were, you know, quite frankly, there were pretty gruesome times, and life expectancy, you know, wasn't anything like we have today, you know. So, but, you know, it's the history factor. And then I didn't realise that you could make a living from it. You know, when I went to careers advice when I was going into the upper six, they said, "Now, Eric, what sort of engineer do you want to be?" Because that's what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and then I ended up, you know, purely by default, working for an antique dealer. My parents collected, and I used to think we were collecting a load of junk. You know, I thought they were spending our inheritance. Such what it. You know, I'm talking about living in a council house on an estate in Nelson. Yeah. Which, for the benefit of the listener, I can tell you now that Nelson is the stockbroker belt of Burnley. So I'll give you some idea. Are you with me?
Yes.
Oh, you are. And then when I worked for the dealer, I saw that these Americans were coming over and they were paying good money for the sort of junk that my mum and dad were busy sticking underneath a piano.
So you put two and two
together. Yes, it was one of those little moments. You know, you see those films where there's a little cameo in the corner of the conscience in the form of a little devil. Yes. So, yes, I was awakened to the fact that there was money in them their pots.
Yeah. Traditionally speaking, antiquing, both, you know, in terms of its television reputation and the reputation of the profession as a whole, it's not a young person's game, at least that's the reputation that it has.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's any truth in that stereotype? And if not, how have you tried to sort of combat that?
Well, it is a problem. You know, I've often said when I go to antique fairs, I either see people with grey hair or no hair. But the great thing about this business is that there's always a new era entering the sort of buying scenario. So at the moment, you see, the retro and vintage areas are doing so well.
Can you just explain what
right, okay, well, we're talking really, 1940s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, and dare I say, 80s.
Okay.
They're now being collected by people of, dare I say, Daniel, your vintage.
Yes.
Because for the benefit of the listener, he's nobbut a lad, as we say in my part of Burnley. But having said that, I think it is one of those areas where, you know, in the past we've had on the Antiques Roadshow, we've had, you know, the Children's Roadshow, and it is quite obvious that children, for want of a better, young people,
yes,
collect.
Hmm.
I mean, it's an instinct,
yeah,
you know, for a lot of people. And it's just a matter of time before you get a bit more pocket money and you can spend that little bit more.
Does it all come down to disposable income in the end?
I think it does. I mean, I started on the basis of, again, using the vernacular, oat for note.
Yes.
In other words, I would collect anything that was free that I could get. I mean, for me, it was tissue wrappers around fruit. Now, it sounds weird. But
I've heard weirder.
So well, no, in the old days, I'm sounding like my granddad now. You know, fruit was individually wrapped. I mean, there's bound to be listeners, you know, who will identify with what I'm talking about. And those wrappers were often very beautifully printed, and sometimes they were gilt as well. And I was the bane of my local greengrocer. I mean, I remember Mr. Marshbank. You know, he'd see me coming, and before he could get the close sign on the door, I was in. So what have you got for me, Mr. Marshbank? You know, and if he could give me half a dozen every week, you know, I was happy and he was happy, and I built up quite a collection. And but, you know, you go on from there. I mean, in the schoolyard there were always people swapping, you know, it could be PG tips cards or Typhoo tea cards or whatever it might be, and then there were the, you know, some kids collected stamps, others collected coins, invariably things that didn't cost you any real money.
Yeah.
So the collecting instinct is there in many of us. And some of us, it's latent. It doesn't come about until maybe you inherit something from your grandma and your granddad. It might be a commemorative mug for George V. And then you think, oh. And then you see one at a car boot for £3 for George. Oh, I'll have that. And then you see another one. Before you know it, you've got half a dozen in your kitchen.
Mm.
And then you come down one morning and they've bred. And there's like 50. All around the house, you know.
Yes.
And it gets you out of bed. And the great, you know, I mean, I love car booting. I love it. I mean, I've never found anything really of any great value. But it's just the adrenaline rush, you see. So I support Burnley Football Club. And yeah. I've got to tell you, there's not been much to get the adrenaline pumping for most of my life following that club. Yes. So people in Newcastle should identify with me.
Yes, I guess so they can. So You've talked about how you sort of drifted into becoming an antiques dealer. How did you get the gig on the Antiques Roadshow?
Well, first of all, let me just tell you that I never really became an antique dealer as such. I actually, believe it or not, found myself unemployed because I drifted into engineering and I got made redundant. So I was one of these, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but when I was working for the antique dealer, I wasn't really earning any real money.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I'll work in engineering. I earn three times as much. I'll try and, you know, put together an antique shop, which I almost got on the ground. But anyway, got made redundant. And then I wrote to Sotheby's and Christie's and Phillips. And then there's this firm called Bonhams down in London. Mm. And here's me. I'm still up in northeast Lancashire at this stage. And to my amazement, they wrote back saying, we're actually looking for a porter in our ceramics department. Would you like to come for an interview?
Wow.
So I went down on a midweek shopper from Preston with my mother and my grandma. And they went off shopping into Harrods and I went for an interview. And a week later, they offered me the job. And I tell you, I was all a bit, you know, it's all a bit in the air at the time, because I say that because I was just about to get engaged, so it's a little bit tricky.
Yes.
And she's still with me, actually. She's still, yeah, but in actual fact, she's outside the studio.
Yes.
Probably telling your assistant that she told me not to take that turning, and if we'd have taken that turning, we'd have been here earlier, you know.
No, it's quite all right, don't worry about that. When you're making the Antiques Roadshow, I guess this is more a sort of production question, but how do you decide which items end up in the show? Because regardless of where you're filming it,
sure,
you must get inundated with hundreds and hundreds of items.
Yeah, we do.
And is it a case of, you know, the most expensive ones get in, or is it the most interesting story, or is it a case of you, the valuers, have to sort of sell the valuation to the producer?
Well, I mean, we know what the producer wants. There's no point bringing us something worth £5,000 that you bought at an antique fair last year for £5,000.
Yes.
We are looking for, you know, items where, you know, an ideal situation would be that the owner hasn't got a clue. And for the most part, they don't have a clue. But we are looking for a story. We are looking for, you know, something, because we want to get whoever owns it involved in the interview. It's no good, you know, me just spouting off everything I know and showing off and one thing or other. We want to make it interesting. So, but basically, when you come to Roadshow, and I did Anik, and people who were local who actually queued that day, yes, probably all wearing their medals for queuing probably 3 or 4 hours, which they had to do. But basically, something will arrive, I will look at it, and I will know whether or not this is a good object worth talking about. And if I've got a good story to go with it, I'll fill in a form, it gets sent to the producer, he comes over to me and says, tell me why we should record this. Mm-hmm. And because I don't do all the programmes, you see.
Yeah.
I don't know if somebody else might have done one in a previous programme, but he will know. So, just basically, we then make that decision, either to or to not record. And if we do record it, that's great. But even then, there's no guarantee that it will appear in the programme. And I always call them the victims. they may or may not see themselves and their objects on the telly.
Right.
But I always console them by saying, well, we're both so photogenic, darling, or whatever, or if it's a gentleman, sir, or whatever, that, you know, they would, it stands there to reason that they will use us.
Right, I'm going to put you on the spot now, because when I was preparing this, I was thinking, well, have I got anything in my house that hasn't been valued, or I was given a few years ago, and maybe it's worth something? And I found, we'll put a photograph up on the website for people who, obviously, because it's radio, you can't see, but it's a... Well, describe the object that's in front of you.
It's a prismatic compass. Well, it appears to be prismatic. It may not be actually floating on oil, but let me just have a look at it, because to all intents and purposes, it looks like something that should date from about the time of the First World War. Now, that being said, it's got a sight, and it has a hinge protective cover, which is also glazed, and it looks the part. But you tell me where that came from, because there's something a bit odd about it.
I was given that by some business friends of my dad who hail from India. I was given that when I was about 8 years old, so we're talking 15 years ago.
Oh, my goodness me, hang on. So you're over 20, we've established that.
I'm 23.
23. I am numerate, you know, for goodness sake.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, I can't overthink that this was probably made in India, you know?
Right.
Although I'm looking desperately to make sure it doesn't say British made. I think it's been based on a British model.
Okay.
But whether or not it was actually made before your lifetime, that's a difficult one. I think, in all fairness, I would have thought that it may be wartime, it may be just a tad later, but it's a nice, It's a nice thing. And I'll tell you what, I'd rather have this than me sat-nav.
Any ideas about how much it would be worth?
Not that you think. I'd never sell it. Oh, I'd never dream of selling it. Oh, I've heard that a few times. Let's put it that way, this way. I think that it would be less than £50.
Okay.
Just how far less, I'll let you decide. You're never going to sell it anyway, are you?
No, it's an heirloom, so
it's an heirloom, exactly. And you never know. One day you might need that. I mean, you might be up on a fell. Yes. On the chair.
You might be on Pendle Hill.
You could be on Pendle Hill. And if you meet a woman with a tall, black, pointed hat, run for it.
Yes, or just throw that at her. I'll do the trick. So let's talk about the two shows that you're doing at the moment. Let's talk about the show you're doing with Sandy Toksvig at the moment, which is...
Well, yes, I'm very much Sandy's sort of sidekick. I come on and tell people whether they're right or whether they're wrong.
And is this on Radio 4?
No, this is on... this is TV, this is radio, right. This is BBC Two.
Right.
And Right Please We Are as well. I mean, it is... Antique Master. Mm-hmm. We're out there looking for Britain's most knowledgeable amateur antiques expert. Mm-hmm. And you have to be an amateur. You can't be involved in the antique trade in any shape or form. And it's it's good fun. And I get to do it all in Townley Hall, which is where I was taken when I was a nipper.
Yeah.
So it's like going home for me in every sense of the word. And I love the smell. I mean, I was one of the earliest victims of solvent abuse. Because the minute you go in there, what hits you? The smell of beeswax. Yes, beeswax does it for me.
Yes.
It's a bit sad, that, isn't it, really? I'm far sadder than you can possibly give me credit for, Daniel. But anyway, that being said, it's interesting meeting. I love meeting people who are passionate. I don't care what they're passionate about. I mean, it could be fly fishing. You know, it could be gliding. I mean, I just like... people who enthuse.
Yes.
And the great thing is that invariably we've got people on that programme who do just that. And not only that, but we've had, if people have been watching it, some incredibly young people. I mean, we're talking people younger than yourself. So, which is all so very gratifying. And it gives me a certain amount of faith. Because, you know, I think I'm good in this business, hopefully, for at least another 15 years or more. So I want to make sure there's plenty of people in the future for me to do business with. So I'm very happy to be doing that programme. And it is, I wouldn't say it's a poison chalice, because, you know, the one thing I've got to make sure is that I get it right.
Yeah.
Because if I get it wrong... By jingo, those letters will fly in.
I was going to say, has there ever been a moment in, particularly on the Antiques Roadshow, have you ever misvalued something and then it's, say, sold for a lot more than you expected?
Well, in all honesty, not really. And I'm not hedging there. It's just that quite often if I'm not sure about anything, I'll say as much. I'll say, look, I don't really know. I can give you a guesstimate rather than an estimate. Because it doesn't do. It doesn't do. If you don't know it, you shouldn't really be talking about it. But sometimes we get great objects which are just worth showing to the great British public.
Yes.
By virtue of what they are or what they might be. You see, when I was... I used to work in a programme called Going for a Song, a lunchtime programme, and I did it. It was BBC One with Michael Parkinson.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, well, you're probably ill. Because it's on at 12:30. And people used to have a one round called the mystery object round. And people would bring all manner of things in over the series. We'd have one on each programme. And as a result of that, people used to bring me things to, you know, to the roadshow.
Yeah.
Because they thought I knew everything about mystery objects, which is just not the case, you know. So, why am I telling this? I'm only telling this because I'm waiting for the next question.
Yeah, okay, we should talk, because we've got about 5 minutes left, we should talk about your show tonight, which is Antique Antics, which is on at the Playhouse from 7:30.
It is.
And as far as I'm aware, there's still a few tickets available. But
well, that's very kind of you to say a few tickets, because I've arranged with the organisers to run most of the audience home tonight in my car. So I could do with a few more coming on. Please, Alec. Come on, I'll be out there with me dog and a piece of string, you know, playing me violin and, you know, 18 children to support, but don't tell the wife. No, I've played on it before, actually, about 6 or 7 years ago. Yes. But
so what's in store for
you? It's me talking about my favourite subject, which is... Well, no, it's me.
All right.
No, that's my favourite subject. So I get to talk. It's a laugh. I mean, I'll tell you what, there's so much... misery out there at the moment. You put the news on, you know, you read your paper. I'm thinking, oh, I think I want to live on a desert island. You know, it's so depressing. You know, and have you seen the price of plums recently? For goodness sake, you know. I mean, you know, everything at the moment is not as it was. And I just like to, you know, I like to get up there and show off and have a laugh with people. And we do. And but at the same time, I'm hoping you're learning something as well. So I'm going to be looking at sort of anecdotal stuff. I look at how I started, you know, as a kid, and some of the great objects that I've had in my day job when I was at Bonhams, and a few things that have turned up on the roadshow, and I'll talk about the roadshow. On top of that, it's anything, you know, it's anything that comes into my head. It's a bit scary, really, because it's an hour and a... The first part is about an hour and 20 minutes, and then the second part, I'm looking at people's objects, because before I get up on stage, I'm there an hour before, and people are invited to bring along... Usually, don't bring jewellery, whatever you do. Yeah. I know nothing of jewellery. I spent all my married life running past jewellery shops with my wife trying to drag me in. So, but I know pots, I know glassware, I know Art Nouveau, deco, oriental things, and I will select about 30 or 40 items from the audience that bring them along prior to going on stage, and they will form part two. So I do a one-man roadshow in part two.
Do you have any preference between sort of TV work and theatre work? Because I imagine that both of them must require a certain amount of travel.
I prefer theatre work, quite frankly, because I get to see the audience. I've no idea who I'm talking to, you know, apart from if I'm doing the roadshow, I know exactly who I'm talking to. I'm talking to one person. But I love the idea of having an audience. And the biggest audience I've ever had was 980, which was fantastic.
Where was that?
That was in Clacton-on-Sea.
Right.
There's not much happening on a Tuesday night in February in Clacton-on-Sea, obviously. Yes. But, you know, if you can make 980 people laugh in unison, I mean, talk about an adrenaline. You know, I've talked about adrenaline twice now, haven't I? But it is, it does give you a buzz. And, you know, and when I hear that song, There's No Business Like Show Business, I now know what they were talking about, because it does give you a lift. And mind you, it can work the other way. That's why I do not speak as an after-dinner speaker to an all-male audience. Sorry, lads, nothing personal, but I'd rather talk to all ladies on any occasion. They understand nuance, wit, and talent when they see it.
Yeah, wasn't it Rad Butler who said that an after-dinner speech would be like a lady's dress, long enough to cover the subject and short enough to be interesting?
Well, can I write that down?
Yes.
Hey, Daniel, that's a cracker. Yes. Thank you very much for that. That's right. Excellent.
Just one final question. I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap this up because we're going towards the 2 o'clock news. There'll be a lot of people listening here who will be coming to the show and will be following you on television. What advice would you give for people, first of all, wanting to get into antiques, and then maybe as a result of that, wanting to do your job?
Ooh, right. You're asking a turkey to whistle for an early Christmas there, aren't you? But I would say that, you know, the car boot is a place to start. You've got to arm yourself with, you know, decent books. You've got to spend some money on some decent books. But more than that, get yourselves into the auctions. That's where you learn. You've got to handle the stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all good having a book. And you've got great museums up here, haven't you? I mean, you're spoiled, really. Down the road, you've got the Laying Art Gallery, which is fantastic. Yeah. And I mean, I'm a Roman man, so I love all the Roman stuff up here. I was on Hadrian's Wall 3 weeks ago, so I can't keep away from Northumberland. It keeps calling me back. I came up with my son about 5 years ago, and he said, you know, Dad, they've got big open skies up here, haven't they? And living down near London, we just don't have that benefit. But no, get yourselves into the auction rooms. It costs you nothing. And if you know a good dealer, make a friend with a good dealer. As long as you're buying stuff from dealers will look after you. Yeah. And we've got the best antique dealers in the world, in this country. I don't forget the Lovejoy stereotypes. You know, we've got great dealers in this part of the world.
Yeah, well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, Eric Knowles. Your show, Antique Antics, is on at the Playhouse tonight from 7:30 p.m. And you're carrying on with the Antiques Roadshow in the meantime. Thank you very much for coming in.
Great pleasure. Thanks for asking me. Lionheart Radio, the voice of Northumberland.